Welcome to I See What You Mean, a podcast about how people get on the same page and stay there, or don't, or perhaps shouldn't. Today my guest is Evan Scott. Evan owns and runs an executive search firm in the Washington, D.C. area, serving the federal consulting market. Evan, you've had a great run, 21 years.
That's right.
You've been in business a long time and have received awards from the community, so you're doing the right thing the right way. What's your secret?
It's a relationship-driven business in Washington. It's all reputation and relationships. That's true with the contractors, with the customers, and with the vendors. So I've worked very hard at developing a good following and a good reputation in town, and helping clients bring in great talent. Anything short of that, you're not going to last long in D.C.
What are some of the things that you get people on the same page about in terms of executive search?
Well, it starts with the client search firm relationship and engagement. So a good example is we will meet with a CEO of a federal contractor, and the CEO typically has a very important position they need to fill. So it really starts out from the initial conversation, our understanding of what they're looking for, both in credentials, background, and more importantly, culture, whether from an environmental standpoint. So the whole process, everything we do is basically relationship-driven, convincing people, because 90% of the candidates that actually get hired through an executive search through our firm are employed. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we're knocking on doors of executives who are well thought of where they are. They're performing, and we're trying to convince them to take a look at another opportunity. It takes a lot of persuasiveness, listening, intuitive skills, understanding who we're speaking with, understanding the client's needs. And basically, we're marriage counselors. We're trying to predict who should marry and who should not marry.
Yeah, right. And that's an important part of getting on the same page is when we shouldn't. Let's come back to that. So you're in an intermediary position. You have to get on the same page with the firm you're searching for and the candidate that you're going to introduce to them. So you kind of have to know what the world looks like to both of them to know if you think they'll be a good fit when they come together. What kind of things do you have to get on the same page about with the candidate, and how do you do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's an inherent bias when a client is paying us or a firm to represent them. The candidates are not paying us. Mm-hmm. It's the old saying, follow the money. Whoever is paying you is the person you're representing.
Right.
But in our business, it can't work like that. And that's been one of the biggest challenges over my years in the search business, is trying to convince clients who are paying me that the candidates and what they're thinking, what their needs are, is as important as what your needs are.
Okay.
So one of the things I'll say to if you retain me, I say, let me ask you this. If you were a candidate and I was representing you to a client, how would you want to be treated?
Interesting.
Right? And we have, over the years of experience, we've been able to convince candidates, hey, look, we're really interested in you as much as our client, because candidly, I don't really care who they hire, but whoever they hire has to perform and do well.
Right.
So we're sensitive that this is a career decision for you. We're not interested in having you go to a company that it doesn't work out
right. In
a year or two.
Right.
Right? Ryan is after the same thing. So we're all together on this. So I think I've been able to take away the biased issue just by the way I interact with candidates. And candidly, I'm not faking it. I really do care about the executives I'm contacting, because I'm impacting their careers. Mm-hmm. And if they end up going to my client, they're going to be a client.
Right. Right.
And they have to do well in order for me to continue doing well. So that's the biggest issue. And early on, candidates would say, well, you represent the client. Well, no, I don't. I represent you and the client.
Well, so a couple of things there. You said, 98% are already employed, right?
90, 92%.
Thank you. So
yeah, 90, there's always that exception where we catch somebody who's in between
sure.
a position. But most of the candidates are actively employed when we recruit them.
But when, so when you approach them, they've already got a job and they might be yeah. looking, but they might be happy in it. After 21 years, these might be people you know, but you might be people that you're just meeting for the first time. So how do you get to know a little bit? What kind of questions do you ask? What's that conversation sound like where you get to know the candidate some to see what you think about the possible match?
I approach folks that I may not know and introduce myself. I tell them who we are, what we're doing. And I ask them, you know, I'm very interested in talking about your career. I know you're VP and running DHS over at XYZ Corp.
Right.
You know, have you been there a number of years? I see that you've been there 3-4 years. You know, how's your career progressing? What's your next step? How, you know, so I start to engage them on what's important to them, not what's important to me.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That makes sense. If they're not familiar with how executive search works, or if they're not familiar with how you work, you want to tell them things to help them understand how you look at it for them, even though the client is paying you. The more they understand that, the more they get your point that your success as an executive search firm is directly tied to their success as a candidate. And so you do want to know about them. You are looking out for their interests. All three is like a triangle. You and the company and the candidate are going to succeed together or not.
Yeah, if you understand my business a little bit, we are really measured on not how well the search goes and getting a person hired. That's only one piece of it.
Right.
We're really measured on once Jane goes to work for my client and how she performs
yeah.
over time. So think about that. You know, what's my motivation? What's my objective in talking to you about an opportunity and working with you and counseling you along the way? My objective is to be sure that if you end up going to the client, that you perform. And if you don't, then I lose a client. You get hurt in your career, right? And then my reputation takes a hit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have to explain that to executives. And most executives get that at this point. I mean, early on, it was a little bit different. But now most people understand.
One of the things that's interesting, people have a, let's say I'm a candidate, or I'm in a job, you contact me. I have a belief about what you do. It might be accurate, might be inaccurate. If I think you're representing the client more than my interests, what you describe to me would shift that perspective.
Correct.
So if you explain, for example, I think it was really critical you talked about a couple of measures of success or effectiveness. Placements is a measure, but if they all lasted under a year or 6 months, or if you had a run rate that were many of them, some number lasted many years, that's a different measure of success.
Right.
Placing is easier than fitting, right? Placing people in is easier than making sure that they fit the place and the place fits them. And that's the longer term measure of success, right?
That's everything. My job is to make sure my clients do not make a hiring mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the clients I represent are small, mid-sized companies where if they're going out for, let's say, head of business development, if they hire the wrong person, that could set them back 2 years.
Yeah.
Understand how federal contracting works.
Yeah.
Right? It takes 12 to 18 months for a good BD person to effectively land some programs. If you bring someone in who just doesn't have the ability to close deals or chases the wrong programs, you lose 2 years. So these hires are not insignificant.
Yeah, you're right.
And my role is to be sure you don't hire the wrong person and the person you hire delivers and makes a difference and has an impact in your company.
I want to touch on one more theme and then ask some questions about the hiring. You mentioned before you might say to the client, who's the executive who's hiring, how would you like to be?
How would you like to be treated and handled if you were a candidate? Which, by the way, many of my clients have been candidates at one time
right.
in their career.
Right.
Others have been recruited, you know. So, you know, you can relate very easily. And then you would I'd want you to represent me.
I like
that. And do what's in my best interest, right?
Yeah, I like how you say things in a conversation that help someone shift perspective. I think if they shift perspective, so anybody could come into a situation. Let's say a situation is hiring. I'm a client, or I'm going to be a client. I've called you. I know who you are. I've looked you up, but I think I know what you do. But I have some impressions about what you do that might not be correct.
Right.
I might even have some things I'm thinking about the position might not be in my best interest, but I might be blind to that. I've been around the consulting industry a long time in DC like you have, and I know lots of owners and executives who I think look at an open position, an executive, hiring that person as a solution to a problem, right? It's a means to some end they want to achieve. If they've got any of that misaligned or got any of that skewed, which just happens to all of us,
yep,
they could be going down and making a hiring decision that you might want to back them up a little bit and maybe just reconsider some things. So how do you work that?
Good question. The real secret sauce in my business are the behavioral references. For instance, I'll interview a candidate. I'll check them out through my network. I'll listen to what they're doing. And I like the person. I like the presentation, the personality. I think my client will like you. And that's wonderful. Okay. So what I'm starting to think now is, okay, I can introduce you to the client. They'll like you. It'll probably go well. You have the credentials. You have the experience. What I don't know yet is how you'll perform in this particular company, because it's a different company, different culture, right? So the key is behavioral referencing. When you start talking to, we call it 360-degree behavioral referencing, where we talk to bosses, peers, subordinates, customers, sometimes when it's appropriate. And we ask questions that, hey, is Joe a good guy? And we don't, that's not what we ask. Yeah. We talk about style. How does Joe get things done? How does he relate to people that work for him? What's his retention rate? How his peers viewed him? And the bosses, you had objectives. Did he or she meet your objectives? And if so, how did he go? So we started asking a lot of soft questions, issues, style issues, personality issues.
Yeah. Right?
And we talked to 5, 6, 7 references who know the person really well because they've worked with them. And you start to pull all that together. And then you get that in writing and you give that to the client. Huh. Now, what the client does is they'll read through that and then, there'll be good points and bad points and all that. No one's perfect. But what it really serves as is it serves as a management tool. So when you hire somebody, you kind of know what you're getting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And those questions you ask really go to the performance question, right?
Absolutely. It's trying to guess if the person will be able to replicate the success of one company at the new company they're going to. That's what we're trying to get at.
What do you do if the hiring company needs to have some expectations reset or think about something in a little bit different way? You and I have talked about owners, especially small business owners, who've been successful to a point in the business. In the growth, right. In the trajectory of the company, they might be blind to their blind spots. They might not know everything they think they know, or that they need to know. Maybe at a certain point in their trajectory, at a certain point in their growth, they're going to apply what they believe they've been successful with, right, in the past to the future.
Absolutely.
And we all do that. It's our starting place. But if you see something that they're missing. Your measure is still, I want to put the right person in there who will perform well. And if I'm an owner and I'm going to hire and you see me thinking through something that could work against me, how do you have the conversation to try to get me on the same page with you where I see it differently and maybe would reconsider some things?
It's about trust, experience, and knowing what you're talking about. Because what we bring to the party is, we've been down this road before with other clients that look like you. Maybe they're smaller, maybe they're larger. And my job is to advise you and counsel you on the realities of the market. Now, a lot of the CEOs I work with, they build successful businesses to a point, but they've never scaled the business.
Right.
Like if they're at 50, 60 million, things are going well, they're making money, they've got a nice company, but then when they lose their disadvantage or small business category, they've got to compete in what we call phone open, which
right.
means they have to go into programs by either partnering or going after it directly. And that's when it gets, that's when it's kind of a different ball game. And most of these CEOs will admit they've never done that. You know, these aren't people that came out of a large tier one and started a business typically. Typically, a lot of them started the business. They were technology folks, engineers. They came into federal contracting.
Yeah.
They got business because 40% of all the business that goes to federal government has to go to a small business. So the large integrators, you know, they've got to use small businesses. So these folks prospered by bringing great technology and doing good work. But then their business becomes 30, 40 million. And then, they don't have a lot of confidence in how to hire, who to hire.
Yeah.
This is all new to them. It's all new. So I take it from there. I say, look, this is all new challenges for you. My job is to be sure you don't make a hiring mistake. And by the way, I have 21 years of experience in the federal contract. I've seen what works and doesn't work. You know, I've counseled other CEOs that you can speak to.
Right.
And my role is to help you build your company. And the other thing I said, look, you know, we'll, if we believe in your organization, we also be willing to take equity as in lieu of our cash fee or as part of our.
I see.
So, you know, I'm more interested in building
in
your
their
company.
Success. Yeah.
Than making placements and getting one or two fees. That doesn't interest me anymore. What interests me is helping you build, and that's really what motivates, and that's what kept me fresh in this business, because it's challenging. I'm not just filling a job; I'm helping build the company.
Well, and as the market changes, what the things that maybe it takes to build a company could change over time, over 21 years, yeah. right? So trust and competence, yeah. there's interesting characteristics there that you're asking, sort of the cards you're playing, asking them to rely on you. A lot of executives I know, especially small businesses, had some subject matter expertise that maybe they won their first contract with. That's their core competence. That's where they got started. At a certain size, they're doing delivery in that core
yep.
area of core
right.
competence, right? They're doing
right,
contract
right, right.
delivery.
That's right.
And they write proposals and they do a lot of things. One of the things that they have to do as they grow is delegate responsibility to others.
Yep.
If they're bringing in an executive, if they think they need an executive level person to now's the time to bring somebody in to add something particular to the organization, they might have a really hard time giving up some control, giving up authority, not micromanaging, whatever they do. It's really important for your candidates that they be trusted, that they're
right.
allowed to come in and do what they do well. How do you help them get on the same page? They're not used to giving over control. It's their baby. They want it done their way. And you know that they can't win that way long term. They can't grow that way long term. They've got to bring someone else in and let them do what they do well. How do you help them get on the same page?
Magic question. And to say that the trust issue is in there is an understatement, because that is a major issue. Up until the point that we may come into the company, you know, they have a team they build from scratch.
Yeah.
And they're close-knit, and the trust isn't the issue. And the CEOs have to be involved. I mean, they're
yeah.
involved in everything. So
yeah.
they, you know, they know what's going on.
Yeah.
To bring in someone at a senior level and to offer the same kind of trust, how can you do that?
Right.
I mean, if you don't know the person, you're just meeting them for the first time, and you're going to give them a big part of your future.
Yeah.
That's
big.
That's the hardest thing. Hardest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Yet, if you want to grow, that means you have to take risks.
Yep.
And you have to invest. Okay. So when you talk about risk, how do you mitigate risks? It's like investing, right?
Yeah.
One way to mitigate a risk is to use a professional like myself, who does this for a living.
Yeah.
And can help you think through all the issues that one needs to think through to be sure it leads you to the right executive and the right hire. And our process helps you do that. And we talk that through along the way. Now, I can tell you over the years what I've done as far as screening the people I want to work with. I'll tell a CEO, look, it's very competitive out there. The people you're looking for are employed. You know, I'm going to help you bring some good people to the table. But let me tell you what I need. And this gets to the trust issue. I need you not only to step up to what the compensation is going to be on base salary, based on not what you want to pay, but based on what the market tells you. And I'm going to tell you that through the search. You have to put together an incentive plan that helps people meet objectives for the business, and you have to compensate them if they meet those objectives.
Right.
It can't be wishy-washy.
Right.
And you have to have a real equity plan.
Hmm.
Because the top people in this market today, because of supply and demand, they're going to take a risk on a small business. They want to know if there's a liquidity event down the road that they're going to be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there'll be companies that call me, and I'll talk to the CEO and owner, and they'll say, well, we're thinking about equity.
Yeah.
What's your incentive plan? Well, we haven't really put the incentive plan in place yet.
Right.
And my response to that is, I don't know if I can help you.
Right. Right.
Because I won't be able to attract the caliber of person that I want to attract and you want to attract. So I start to walk away from business, which I really, that's not natural for me. But I also understand that if I take on a client that just doesn't have the right organization to accommodate the kind of people I'm going to bring into them, then we're not going to have a success.
You won't be successful, right?
Yeah. And they can hire people. They can fill jobs all day long, but they're not going to get the creme de la creme.
Right.
So that gets, and that's the trust issue. Giving equity away? What are you kidding? I mean, it's my company.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna give it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I have a conflict resolution background, and there's some belief that people in that field resolve differences and get everybody on the same page. But sometimes that's not the right outcome, and there's reasons why sometimes you shouldn't get on the same page. So I've had fun as I've designed the podcast, and it's going to be part of my coaching program. Maybe sometimes you have to have a way to respectfully disagree. See if you can protect a relationship. Let's not trash a relationship on the way out. And maybe there's a way to use differences constructively. It might not be the same thing as being on the same page, but maybe you can use differences constructively and move forward for the good of the organization. But getting on the same page is not the be-all and end-all of every time there's a difference.
I agree with you. It's all about relationships, my friend. That's what business is. Business is about relationships and trust and doing what you say you're going to do.
Being reliable. That's right. That's right. So I called the podcast. I see what you mean, because all of us in life, it's personal life, work life, doesn't matter. We have these moments where I have an aha moment. And I go, I see what you mean. You're doing some education of the client, right? Sometimes they don't want to hear it, and you might not be successful for them, so you might have to turn business away. What do you leave them with as a thought? Keep the door open, help them think through something that you know they're going to face, and maybe they'll come back to you in 6 months or a year and say, all right, Evan, I hit the wall. I see what you mean. Will you help me now? How do you sort of leave it to try to help them out as you're leaving?
I give them the advice I just mentioned. I said, look, you know, attract talent in this market. These are the things you have to do, A, B, C, you know, incentive plan, equity, and all that. I'll say to them, look, you know, if you really want to be competitive in going after the best talent, retain search gives you the ultimate competitive advantage in the market. If you've got someone who knows the market, has a network, and does this for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a CEO, you're not recruiting for a living. You're running a company.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? But this is what we do for a living, right? If you get to a point where you're not getting the right kinds of people through your network or through contingency firms or Indeed or whatever you want to use, let me know.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you what happens in many cases. The company, they don't want to pay a retainer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to pay a retainer. What if you don't fill the job? Right. So I get a retainer, and then I work in the search and I don't fill the job. what happens is on my business, I end up, A, not spending a lot of time, wasting my time. I get one payment.
Yeah.
Right? I don't get, I'm no repeat business, and everyone, it's a lose-lose all around. Right?
Yeah.
So if you don't want to pay a retainer, that's fine. I understand that. But in this day and age, that's foolish. Because the best investment you can make is in people. And that's the only investment. Right? Especially if you're a small business and you're hiring head of operations or head of business development or CFO, you want the best, right?
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you invest in the best? Why wouldn't you give yourself the best chance to see the best people? And what's a search fee? It's nothing compared to the return you'll get from hiring the right people.
Well, and here's the truth. If they win, they're going to grow. So at some point they start out, like my brother and I used to say, you can't afford, we were startups. You can't afford an attorney until you can't afford to not have one. You can't afford
That's
an accountant until you can't afford to not have one.
That's right.
So I think of what you do that way, but here's what I think happens. At some point you're going to have to bring on some more senior people, like you said, operations, finance, HR, IT. But then it's not just at that level, the C level. If I have you under retainer and I invest in the relationship with you, I'm going to believe that you'll get to know my company.
Yep.
Because I'm going to win something and I might need to bring an account manager into a big new account. Project
Correct.
Managers, program managers, right? The more you know the company, the more you are ahead of the curve with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because once someone has said, hey, we need a position filled, write a PD, they're behind the curve. Right?
That's right.
Yeah. The more you know a company, the more you can be ahead of the growth curve with them.
Right.
If I'm going to grow over time, I'm always going to need to hire.
Yep.
And I do need good people, not just with technical capability, but who fit the organization, who work with each other, who create a culture, who people want to come to work and work here every day, or hire or call their friends and say,
yep.
Hey, we've got something that's going to open up. You should apply. The more you know them, the better you can do that. And you're not even, what'd you call it before?
Marriage counselor, right.
Yeah, you're like, you're really like the uncle or something who knows the family, who knows from the inside out.
Right.
The more you know from the inside out, the better you can operate.
Yeah, well, my clients say to me, I want to retain you. I want you to get to know my company. I want you involved in strategy. I want you ahead of the curve. So a lot of the clients I'm working with now have me on retainer. They want me involved. I set up my practice to accommodate more positions than just what I fill. For instance, we just picked up a solution architect position for one of my clients. Now, I don't do that, but I have someone on my team that does that kind of work.
Yeah.
So they're working that position. Account manager, program manager, capture manager.
Yeah.
I've got people that know how to fill those positions. So I kind of set up my practice to accommodate what I know I'm going to need when I'm brought into a company as a confidant and somebody helps them at a very senior level with strategy and talent.
Yeah.
So, and that's what's fun about our business. And the clients that I represent, we measure our success by how well an executive performs 1 year in the job.
Okay.
Very straightforward. We have a 90% success rate. 9 out of 10 executives that we help our clients recruit perform in the job. Not 100%.
Yeah, well.
There's been situations that didn't work.
You can't, yeah.
But 90%. Now, if anyone's rational and thinking about that, gee, there's a recruiter out there that 9 out of 10 people that this firm places will succeed in the position.
You're doing well in a year, yeah.
Why the heck would I even consider not, why would I not use that?
That's interesting, right.
You ran businesses. Ask any executive what your hiring success rate been over your career. You'll hear 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
60-40. I mean, you hear these, I'm usually right, but frequently I'm wrong. So how can you run a small business by being 50-50 on hiring? You have to be 100%, which is impossible. hope, but it might be not there.
Well, so there's a lot of uncertainty in hiring. One of the ways that I suppose you help people and get them on the same page with you and then with the candidate is that you remove some of that uncertainty. Now, you're probably doing this through a lot of your professional judgment, right? But that's where the trust and competence factors come in that you mentioned earlier. For someone who's hiring, hasn't used an executive search firm before, knows what they are, but hasn't used one, so hasn't had the personal experience, what do you describe to remove some of the uncertainty about how, not just how you'll work, but how it will go for them?
A couple of ways to approach that. I've taken the attitude, I'm very flexible. You haven't used a search firm before. This is a new experience for you.
Right.
And I appreciate that, okay? Why don't we do this? Why don't we, well, fees are typically based on, percentage of base salary, and we go to third, a third, a third. It's pretty traditional in our profession. Why don't we work together in this? Why don't we take a small retainer, okay? Maybe not the full retainer, but, a retainer. And then why don't we start the search together? Let's put together position spec. Let's get into the marketplace.
Interesting.
And you'll see kind of how we work. I'll also see how the candidates are responding to your company.
Interesting.
Reputation is. So let's do this together.
Okay. Very experiential.
You're not committing to whole fee. You're not committing to give your life away. What you're doing is you're hiring a professional like an attorney.
Yeah.
Or a CFO. And you're hiring them on an outsourced basis to help you with a project, with an issue. So we ease into it. And that's worked beautifully. It works for me, but candidly, I don't want to represent a company I can't attract talent to.
Yeah.
And you don't want to spend a lot of money and not get any results, and you don't understand, you don't know what to expect.
That's brilliant, Evan. That's experiential. That puts them in the front seat with you.
Yep.
They get to see how you work. They get to see how the engagement works, right?
Right.
Those are the kinds of insights I think give people that aha moment. Now I see what he does. I see how he does it. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, well, it's necessity. It's just knowing the customer. I have to know my clients. My clients are saying to me, I don't want to pay a retainer, or I have this concern. I've got to work with you. I mean, I'm interested in talking about those issues and concerns. Candidly, it's not the first time I heard this.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, this is what I do for a living. I mean, I've been through it all. And also, the other thing I can do is, why don't you talk to some of my references?
Yeah, yeah.
Or people that know me. I'll give you the name of two CEOs that I'm involved in, I'm on retainer with. Give them a call, see what they think.
Yeah.
But this whole federal contracting world is really fascinating, what's going on down here. But you've got thousands of federal contractors, literally thousands, and the owners are all facing the same issues, and there's a very limited talent pool down here.
Is it, think of the C-suite, is it limited across that? It's for operations, for finance, for HR, for IT, for customer experience, whatever the C innovation, or is it limited more severely in any areas?
Think of it this way. It's the 80-20 rule. 20% of the people in your organization are the ones you can't live without. When we're retained, we're asked to find the stars. Mm-hmm. We live in the 20%. That makes it more difficult. Okay, so there's 10 CFOs. Out of those 10 CFOs, I've identified two are really, really, those are the ones we want.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 4, 5, and 6 would be acceptable. Right? The old saying is a CFO is never fired because they can't read a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
All about fit and culture and strategy and business acumen. So,
and that makes the market tight.
Yeah. And BD is kind of the whole motor down here, the BD function.
Yeah.
Right. Those are the people that have to have a customer intimacy. They have to identify the programs. They have to be writing the RFP.
Yeah.
And that's where you start to win business down here. Everyone wants the same people. So you bring someone like me in, and I give you that competitive edge. I mean, I can get to these people. I can talk to them. Then I can have the career discussions with them.
Yeah.
Kind of see where they are. Congratulations on the win. What's next for you?
Yeah.
And maybe they say, well, your client sounds interesting. I'd be happy to talk to them. That's how this whole thing works. Very, networky and soft issues and being on top of the market, and we follow the contracts every day. We know who's who, who's doing what, and that's what we bring to our clients.
Well, it's been very interesting. I've enjoyed this conversation. Some interesting things about ways you create a perspective shift for some people to help them see something differently. The measures of effectiveness or measures of success you use. Behavioral referencing is a really interesting way to sort of triangulate what you can learn about somebody in a short period of time from talking to different people.
Exactly.
Very interesting ways that these kinds of things, you know, you could use in other settings besides what you do, which is, you know, my hope for the podcast is give people some insights or some ideas of some things to try. So some interesting things you've done. You're a pro after 21 years. What did it take you 20 to get me? You're a pro after 21 years.
It was that last year that I really took off. But, you know, I spent 20 years in the business before. This is my second firm. I helped build the first retainer search firm in Philadelphia.
Oh.
Back in 1980, we two guys, we started this firm, and we wouldn't do it contingency. We went around to Philadelphia-based companies asking for a retainer, and then we would get thrown out of a lot of offices.
Yeah.
But our first client was Kraft Foods.
Who?
Larry Janicki, head of human resources. They were trying to fill regional sales jobs around the country. And they run ads, use contingency. They can fill half the jobs. And we said, why don't you take the retainer approach down to that level?
Yeah.
The retainer at that point was only at the very senior level.
Right, right.
And they gave us a check. They retained us. And that's what launched our business. And when I left that business 21 years ago, we were the 21st, the 20th largest search firm in the country.
Wow.
I mean, we had four offices. I mean, it was a great firm. We had a lot of successes, a lot of big clients. But I got to the point where I wanted to kind of do my own thing, and I really was intrigued by federal contracting. I think it's a great space. I also saw that there was a supply and demand, and the customer, which is a federal contract, they always spend money. Jeez, isn't that cool? There's always money flowing.
Yeah.
There's a federal contract is always doing well.
Yeah.
But the talent, unless you work this market, you don't know this market. You can't go from the commercial world and jump into federal contracting, right?
Yeah.
It's a whole different world.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people companies don't appreciate that. They buy companies in federal, they hire people, and they expect the same results they get from the commercial business. Where are the quality results? We need this in 6 months. I said, do you want me to go to the IRS and tell them to release the program so you can meet your quotas?
Yeah, exactly.
They don't get it.
It's a different world.
Right? It's a different world down here. So it's patience and process, and it's a hard business. But I saw that, and that's why I wanted to jump in. You know, in my business, you need a specialty. You need something that differentiates yourself from all the other search guys and gals that are running around. And that was my niche. And it worked out good.
It has. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Luke, good meeting you.
Likewise. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's how we see it, my friends. I want to thank Evan for joining us. Send questions and suggestions through the app. Subscribe and give me a 5-star rating, unless you can't, in which case, please tell me why. And join me next week when we take another look at how to get on the same page and stay there, unless we shouldn't.